and Sanctuary with Emma Newman. Hello, my lovelies. It's very January out there, isn't it? Let's have a nice cup of tea together and maybe a cheeky biscuit or three and have a little catch-up. While I'm having a cup of tea, you can have whatever you like, of course, as long as it makes you happy. If it pleases you, feel free to imagine that we're in a cosy log cabin up in the mountains. Outside, the wind is bitterly cold, but in here it is warm and safe. Help yourself to as many biscuits as you'd like from the tin and grab one of those blankets from the pile over there. If this is your first time here, welcome. This podcast is all about being safe, cosy, and having a break from all of the horrors in the world. It is as low stakes as it is possible to be, unscripted, and mostly me just burbling away so that your brain can have a rest. This is the first episode of season two, and it's a little bit different, as I actually recorded everything after this little intro while being filmed. I'm still experimenting with the format, as I will soon explain, but just in case you are someone who listens to podcasts through YouTube, you can find this episode there as well. I'll link to it in the show notes. But just to warn you, if you do go over to the YouTube version, you will actually see me. Now I'm going to use the magic of editing to ease you into the rest of the show now, so if things sound a teeny tiny bit different in the transition, that's why. The reason why I'm doing this is twofold. One is so that I can put stuff on YouTube and hopefully people will find it on YouTube and come and listen to the whole podcast. The other is to get over my extreme fear of talking to camera. It's hard. And there are various reasons why I need to get over this. Projects that are happening in the future, a project that I'm working on at the moment that isn't necessarily talking directly to camera, but is involving me being filmed a lot, and I just want to get more comfortable with it. If you're just listening to this on the podcast, that is absolutely fine. You're not missing anything very interesting at all. I am sitting in my living room. I have bookcases behind me, a very small proportion of the bookcases in my home. There are only three shelves on view. And I admit it. I put all of the books I've written and the books that are the anthologies that I've had stuff in up there on the shelf, and the three awards. There's my Hugo Award for Tea and Jeopardy, my old podcast. That's the British Fantasy Society Best Short Story Award, which I won for a story called A Woman's Place that was in the 22 Baker Streets anthology. Is that the right name for it? I can't remember. And that is the award that was given in place of a Hugo when there was all of that horrible, horrible nonsense going on with the sad puppies. Good grief. That seems like such a long time ago. Don't we live in a different world now, thanks to all of that? Anyway, that was only part of what happened, but oh my goodness, you can draw a straight line from some really, really fetid areas of the internet that led to Gamergate and sad puppies and then all of the other horrible things that have happened since. But I'm not going to talk about that here, because this is Tea and Sanctuary. The other change with the podcast is that I realised that one of the reasons I was finding it so difficult to, and I do emphasise one of the reasons I was finding it so difficult to keep to the podcast schedule that I set before, is because I had a podcast that had several different categories. And at the beginning, when I was playing with the concept for this podcast, I felt that I needed to have distinct categories of stuff to make it interesting and to help me to work out what to talk about. And I've come to realise that actually that made it difficult, because sometimes every 2 weeks there weren't five different things that I wanted to talk about in the correct categories. So the approach that I am taking now is that this is going to be even more a gentle, cosy chat, and I will talk about a few things that do fall into those categories, but not necessarily all of those categories every episode. So what do I feel like talking about today? It's weird having the camera here, because I feel like I need to say something which is kind of engaging to watch, but that's not what this is about. I've noticed on YouTube that there are so many podcasts that put up footage of the podcast itself being filmed, but that is not what it's about. I guess I'm still figuring out whether to ignore the camera or not. I have a very difficult relationship with cameras. I don't get on with them. I always look weird in photographs. And yeah, I don't like the way I look, and it just feels odd. But if you're just listening to this in the podcast, you don't want to listen to this. How about I tell you about a lovely trip I had recently to visit my grandmother? I went with my son, my lovely, lovely son, and we went to stay with my dad for a few days. And it was earlier this year, and I hadn't seen my grandmother since before the pandemic. And that was because of all sorts of reasons, logistical problems, also shielding reasons, just being super careful to protect her health because she's 87 years old, and also my dad as well to protect him. But Beanie, that's my son's nickname, and I went up to visit my dad, and we all went over to visit my grandmother, who lives just north of Bury up in Lancashire, or Bury, if you say it correctly. And it was just such a joy. It was such a joy to see her. She's got a bit more deaf since I last saw her, but she was so sprightly. And we went out for a meal. It was wonderful. She lost her husband, my step-grandfather, during the pandemic. And it was horrendous because we couldn't be with her in that awful time. So it was strange going back and not having Wynne there. But anyway, we went out for a meal. It was all lovely. And she was telling us about how every morning, well, every day, but it is always in the morning, she walks up the hill. So she lives in this beautiful valley, and there's a hill that goes up from where the park that she lives in is. And she's 87 years old, and she's like, every morning I go up there and have a walk uphill. And when we got back, I said, I've never actually been up this hill, Nana, and I've lived there. She's lived there for as long as I can remember. She's lived there since I was a very small kid. And I'd never walked up the hill. We just went and visited her and Wynne and left again. And so I said, can we go and walk up the hill with you? Because I'm curious to see what it's like. And so we went up the hill, and there's this path that goes down into the valley, down to the, if you imagine a valley with two sides, quite steep sides, and this road we were walking up went up one of the hills at the side of the valley. And it was about halfway up the hill. So there was a point where the path diverged and went down to where the river flows. And it's a really big river, and it's beautiful. There's trees everywhere. It's really idyllic. And it's like a sneeze and a bless you away from the town, but it doesn't feel like it, just because it's this little nook of nature, in a very, very, very urban setting. And we were walking up the hill, and Nanny was talking about how she hadn't been down to the river for over 2 years because my aunt, her daughter, obviously, was concerned that she would fall if she was going down there by herself, and said, you can't go down there by yourself. And because of the pandemic, et cetera, she hadn't been down there for over 2 years. And I said, well, you know, we're here with you, Nana. We can go down with you. And she's like, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. And we just carried on up the hill. And we got to the point where she usually goes to. And then we decided to start heading back. And then she just randomly goes off down this path, just takes off. And this is a steep hill, and this is not a proper path. It's just like little divots cut into the hillside. And, you know, rudimentary stairs that are made with like half logs. And I was so worried. But honestly, she zipped up that hill just as fast as me and my son. You know, she is very fit for an 87-year-old. And she was gambling down these steps like she was a mountain goat. And I was thinking, oh, my life, I'm so nervous. So I hurried and walked down the steps ahead of her just to make sure that there was someone ahead of her. And we went down to the bottom of the valley, and there was this like concrete building there. We think it's got something to do with like a water monitoring station. We don't even know what it was, but we had a nose around it and the door was locked. And we just poked around, you know, like kids poke around places they haven't been. It was just so lovely. It was such a magical random diversion off this walk. And what was so wonderful is that this was the river where my father and my uncle and my sisters played in when they were kids, when they were younger than my son who was with us there. And she was talking about it, and you know, there was this like little outcrop of concrete, and she was pointing at it and talking about how they all used to jump off there, and it's quite incredible. It was just one of those perfect days. And we mucked about a bit. We picked up some litter that was there. And then we went back up the hill. And Nanny was so ecstatic that she'd gone down there again after not being able to go down there for so long. And it was just wonderful. I love my Nana so much. She's this tiny, tiny northern matriarch. Like, she's 5'1", and she is just a force of nature. And the stories I could tell you about my grandmother, she's just incredible. I love her dearly. And it was just the most magical day. I hope that I am as sprightly as her when I'm 87 years old, because that's pretty impressive. I phoned her on her 85th birthday and said, oh, yeah, how are you, Nanny? And I call her Nanny or Nana, whatever comes out. And she's like, oh, I'm fine, love. I've been painting my shed. I was like, painting your shed? Oh, yeah, all it needed doing. There's just nothing stops her. She's fantastic. I adore her. So I thought you might like to hear about that. One of the things I've been thinking about with this podcast, and that people seem to really enjoy, was just that it's really low stakes. I promise that I'm never going to talk about anything depressing or scary. I had a little brush against it a moment ago with the mentions of the sad puppies, but only because I saw the award, and that's behind us now. And they didn't achieve what they wanted to, and that is the thing to take away from that time. But yeah, I'm only going to talk about nice things. I'm going to talk about hopeful things, things I've enjoyed, because there is so much in the world that is so scary and so horrible. I just want this to be like sitting down and having a blanket wrapped around you, you know, with a mug of tea. If you don't like tea, hot chocolate, whatever drink you like. I just want it to feel like that, to be calming. That reminds me of something that I want to mention, a podcast I've been enjoying myself. I'm not a big listener of podcasts, but I've been trying to get more exercise lately, and I've discovered that podcasts help me do that. And there's one that I've been enjoying immensely in the last couple of weeks, and it's called the Blind Boy Podcast. And it comes out weekly, and the guy who does the podcast has got the most divine Irish accent. Oh my life, I could listen to him all day. Absolutely beautiful. But the thing that I really love about his podcast is that it's kind of like a combination between whatever's on his mind in the moment, like that week, and also a very gentle essay. And I say essay reluctantly because it's not as formal as that. He just talks through stuff that he's been giving a lot of thought to. And because he's got a wonderful mind, it's like a meandering journey around a particular thing that he's got really interested in. And he's autistic, like I am. And there's something really joyful about listening to somebody whose brain seems to work in quite a similar way to mine. And that doesn't happen very often. It's lovely. I really, really recommend it. The subjects are wide, diverse. He is a really, really smart, thoughtful, compassionate, beautiful person. I would love to be able to meet him one day. And I'm very aware that I'm not saying his name because I can't actually remember his name, which is terrible, isn't it? But I am appalling at names. And that is something I've got from my dad. I'm just terrible at names. But it's the Blind Boy podcast. So go and search for it. He's done some really interesting episodes. I've listened to one which is about the origin of the drink Baileys. I love Baileys, and he talks about how it came about, and it was very interesting, and goes via secret societies of the 1700s. Go and listen to it. It's gorgeous. I enjoyed Baileys this Christmas just gone. I was very, very lucky to spend it with two very dear friends of mine, and one of them and I stayed up late after the other had gone to bed, and we got the Baileys out. We got the Baileys out, and as my late grandfather would say, it went down like ruddy milk. It was so nice, and we talked and talked and talked. Didn't realise how drunk I was. It does that. It just kind of creeps up on you. And I went up to bed, and I'd stopped drinking quite a while before going to bed. And I went up to the guest room and I could tell I was still drunk because I got my eye drops. Because I have very dry eyes, I have to put an eye drop in every night before I go to sleep. And then instead I stuck it up my nose. Listener, it was then that I realised that I was still very, very drunk. So yes, he's done an episode on Baileys, and the one that I'm listening to at the moment is about rewilding and mythology, and oh my goodness, I felt like fireworks were going off in my brain when I was listening to him talking about mythology. So yes, please, please, please go and listen to him. He's marvellous. Before I go any further, here's a big thank you to my gorgeous patrons for keeping the teapot full and for helping me to keep my podcast ad-free. If you'd like to join them in supporting the show, go to www.patreon.com/Emma Newman. If you'd just like to buy me a nice cup of tea, go to ko-fi.com/Emma Newman. Something else that I've enjoyed recently: me and my housemate decided that we were going to watch all of Sharp, the television series that started in the 90s, that stars Sean Bean, or Sean Bean, as my late bestie used to call him. And I had only vague memories of the show, and I hadn't watched all of them. And I think I had seen, it's a bit like James Bond movies, you know, where you haven't seen one all the way through, but somehow it's always the same one that you stumble across randomly on TV. It was just like that. I'd not actually watched one all the way through that I could remember anyway. And so we went back and started at the beginning. We watched the very first episode right through, right to the end. And oh my goodness, what a shock. It's really good. And that shouldn't be a shock, right? But a 1990s show set in the Napoleonic era, I was worried that it was just really not going to be that great. And it is fantastic. And I thoroughly recommend it if you have not watched it. But watch it from beginning to end. Because the character development, the emotions, my feelings. It's so good. It's so good. And surprisingly feminist, surprisingly progressive, and really very much from the perspective of the female gaze. We came to the conclusion by the end of it that it was actually a big conspiracy to make men watch romance tropes by disguising it in war. Because that's what so many of the episodes were. So many. And it's funny because I said to one of the besties I spent Christmas with, I said to her, we started to watch Sharp, and she was like, oh, you're going to watch him womanizing his way around Europe. And that was like her recollection of it. But no, he's not like that. There are many, many women. This is over many years. And there's, you know, one dodgy thing that he does. But it's all about the women throwing themselves at him. It's hilarious. But also young Sean Bean as Sharp. Oh, my life. Oh, my goodness. Heavens, heavens to Betsy. So hot in that uniform. Oh, oh. So I thoroughly recommend revisiting it if you have not seen it for a long time. And if you have never seen it, you're in for a treat. It's great. I loved it. And the other thing that I really loved about it is that there are like proper villains in this show. Ones that are that are so dastardly that you just don't tend to see these days in, I'm trying to think of things where there's like, other than the very silly James Bond villains that are obviously villainous, there are so many things these days where the villain is made sympathetic or understandable, at least, or that because you can understand why they're the way they are, it kind of tempers how villainous they are. I don't know if I'm describing this very well, but in Sharp, there are villains where you're like, I just want to punch him in the nuts. Some of them I wanted to just do a lot worse to, because they're just so reprehensibly evil. But you know, the catharsis of them getting what they deserve, or their redemption, or the comeuppance, it's a really joyful thing. And something that I don't really associate with a lot of stuff that I've watched in recent years. So yeah, go, hurry. And it's not just, you know, Sharp looking good in his uniform. There are so many beautiful Regency gowns and, oh, boobs for days. It's just heavenly. All of it is beautiful. I've got to try and think of something else now. It's made me go all squiffy. One more thing that I'm going to talk about is a book that I've been meaning to read for ages and finally read, and it's The Ministry for the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson. And oh, I loved this book so much. Such a weird book. Such a weird book, because it has got loads and loads and loads of tiny chapters that are just kind of like snapshots of like different people doing different things around the world. And it's got like a main spine in the book, you know, characters that you follow through several years. It covers several years. But it's unlike any other book I've read in just in its structure and also in the scope of it, the sheer ambition of it. There are so many really smart ideas in there. If you haven't read it, it's near future, and it's about a ministry, a governmental, maybe an NGO, I can't remember, but a body that's established to effectively force people to consider future generations of human beings and to try and use that to force people to change how we do things to mitigate the effects of climate change and also to begin to reverse them. And it takes in all sorts of things, like creating a new currency to deal with this, and geoengineering, and all kinds of political ramifications, but also snippets that are on such a human and personal level. There's one chapter which is literally a list of all of the different groups of people that are participating in a conference. And they're predominantly, if memory serves, it's been a fair few months since I read it, indigenous peoples and different organizations that are doing amazing, amazing stuff. And it's just a list of them introducing themselves. And I couldn't stop crying because it was just so beautiful in the context of the book. I can't describe it. You have to read it. You have to read it. It really profoundly affected me and made me think a great deal about my own ambitions for what I'm writing next. I've been working on a utopia I worked on it quite a lot at the end of last year. And I got to a point where I had to stop because I was thinking, I'm not satisfied with putting this far enough in the future. I wanted it to be near future, but I wasn't satisfied with not knowing how we get from where we are today to that place. And it wasn't satisfying to me to kind of just gloss over that, because originally I was thinking, does it matter? You know, what I want to do is to describe what life is like now and how good it could be, and to focus on the emotional stories of the people in this place that I want to tell. I had like a whole plot worked out. But weirdly for me, it was the world building that I was not happy with. And so I decided to pause the project. Going back to the Ministry for the Future, I really recommend it. I can see it being a bit of a Marmite book for some people because it is weird. It's a weird structure. It's the kind of book where it's difficult in terms of you can't necessarily form a very deep emotional attachment because the narrative doesn't reflect that. Even though saying that, I did form a deep emotional attachment to a couple of the characters, but you only sporadically visit them. So, you know, that is different to a lot of books where you tend to follow particular characters more regularly, checking in with them. But it's remarkable. It's a remarkable piece of work. And it kind of made me think, you know, what an amazing thing to leave behind in the world. That's the kind of book where I think, wow, I really hope that Mr. Robinson, you know, sitting back of an evening with whatever he likes to drink, feels good about having left that in the world. I really hope that, because it's beautiful. And very thoughtful and very thought-provoking. Yeah, I think that's all I want to say about that. Earlier this year, I released the short story collection set in the Planetfall universe called Before, After, Alone. And it was an interesting experience because it's the first time that I've self-published. I had a collection of 10 short stories that had accumulated over the kind of the pandemic, when I was trying to recover from the breakdown and the burnout. Short stories were the only thing that I could actually write. Yeah, I wrote them and then sent them out to my newsletter subscribers, and they were just sitting there, not doing anything. So, you know, some people had all of the stories if they'd been a long-term subscriber. Some people only had a couple. I wanted to gather them together, but also kind of write notes on where the stories fit into the world and, you know, the thinking behind them. And so I decided to publish it as my first self-published collection. And I also did the audiobook version as well. And I was under no illusions whatsoever that it would bring in a vast amount of money. I'm quite pleased with how it's done, especially considering that I am absolutely appalling at promotion, honestly, so bad at it. But all I wanted it to do was kind of just sit there forever, just, you know, maybe a trickle or a tiny bit of income each month, I'd be very happy with. I just wanted it to be out there and available for people who enjoyed the Planetfall universe and who didn't necessarily know about the newsletter. What was interesting about that as well is that now that I've self-published, I've realised just how easy it is, mechanically speaking. When I looked into doing this, oh, over a decade ago, like 15 years ago, it was so much harder. But in the intervening period, the tools that have been developed that make it easy are just incredible. So it's been an interesting experience and has made me think about other things that I might like to do. I don't want to give up on traditional publishing at all. It's just that the stage of my life that I'm in at the moment, because of really severe financial pressures, I'm having to do lots of different work to try and stay afloat. So I'm doing the project I can't talk about yet. I'm doing audiobook narration. When I manage to, I try and stick something up on YouTube, and I've just recorded a couple of videos for YouTube that I hope will really help people as well. I would also really like to release the Split Worlds short stories as my next collection. And that is something which I think really does lend itself towards self-publishing, because there are so few publishers out there that are able to do collections. And the publisher that published all five books, that's not something that they do. And I made them aware of what I want to do. And they were like, yeah, that's cool, go ahead. But weren't interested in doing it. So that's something that I want to do. But when this huge, huge project came up, when I got the green light to do that, I've had to put that on the back burner too. But it's made me think a lot about how to manage multiple projects. And also, I probably should have made some notes on this and thought about it beforehand. It's also made me consider how much the world has changed just since I got my first book deal. How the challenges that we face as authors are continually evolving and deepening as we continue to try to survive late-stage capitalism in all of its glory. I'm kind of torn between feeling incredibly lucky to be in a time when it is so easy to release my own work, to publish my own work, but also feeling like it would just be so nice if we had a bigger, healthier publishing ecosystem than what we have now. But anyway, wanting to remain completely positive, I just wanted to kind of say, if anyone is thinking about self-publishing something, it's actually much easier than I thought. The promotion side of it, no, that is still excruciatingly difficult. Whether I'm traditionally published or self-published, whichever project it is, talking about my own work, promoting it online, it's really, really hard. So, you know, if you have bought a copy of Before After Alone and have enjoyed the stories, please review it wherever you review things that you've bought and read or listened to. Tell other people about it. It really helps. These days, with social media being the way that it is, that's the only way that we get the word out about things. But yeah, it was an interesting experience and something that I'm really pleased that I managed to do. It was something that I never thought I would be able to do by myself. And that's a nice thing. And it feels nice that those stories are out there in their own collection. Like I say, I would love to do the Split World short story collection as well. I was thinking that it'd be nice to tie it in with the 10-year anniversary of the publication of the first book, but I think I'm going to miss that deadline. So it may end up being the 10-year anniversary of the completion of the series. I'm not sure yet. I've always wanted to write the sequels to those. I mean, that series is completely finished. And if you've read the Split Worlds novels, you know that is very much completely finished. But I still feel like there's more that I want to play with. And yeah, there just aren't enough hours of the day. And with things being so hard financially and economically, it's scary trying to decide which project to, when I have the time again, when this secret project is done, you know, deciding which writing thing that I want to go into. Do I do the utopian? Do I do the short story collection first? I would really love to finish the industrial magic series. Brothers Ruin and Weaver's Lament are two novellas that were published by Tor.com. They haven't done fantastically well. Tor weren't interested in any more of the series, but I had ideas for another two novellas. And now that I've self-published this collection, I'm thinking, well, I could just write those and put them out there. Oh my goodness, I could do that, because there's nothing I hate more than unfinished stories. And obviously, I've always wanted to write a fifth Planetfall novel. But it's scary devoting the sheer amount of time that it takes to do that when, yeah, I don't think that I have the economic security to do that. That's the way of the world at the moment. And so I have to take on other work. And just because of the way my brain is, it's very tiring, very demanding. And yeah, it's a work in progress, let's put it that way. Figuring out how to do all of this stuff in the circumstances, the life circumstances I'm in now, it's going to be interesting. There are so many things that I want to do, and I don't have enough time or energy to do all of them. And prioritization is something that is very difficult. But yeah, I just wanted to say, yay, I did that thing. You can do that thing too. It's really not that hard. For anyone who's curious, I used Draft to Digital for the ebook version, and that was really very easy to do. And I also put a version on directly on Kindle, KDP, because I already had From Dark Places on there, because I had the account for the ebook when it was published by a tiny press, and that tiny press is now gone. So it made sense to publish directly to KDP. And I used Findaway Voices to release the audiobook. At some point, I think I'm probably going to do a YouTube video talking about those decisions and what I learned in that process. But that's definitely for a separate thing. That's not for Teeing Sanctuary, because not all of it is very positive. I think that's probably enough for today. I'm going to say goodbye. I still haven't decided whether I'm just going to release this entire video on YouTube or whether to cut it up into snippets. If I wanted to give good offerings to the evil algorithm god of YouTube, logic dictates that I would cut it up into the distinct chunks and release them bit by bit. But there's a bit of me that kind of doesn't ever want to pander to the algorithm, because it doesn't fit with how I want to do things. So I'm not sure. I haven't decided. But this is probably the first episode. I was thinking about just recording lots of different chunks and kind of just stitching them together in whichever order meant that I could, you know, fill different categories. But no, maybe it's okay for it to be organic. Maybe I don't need to over-prepare and over-engineer everything. I think the most important thing is that you have like half an hour of calm. Half an hour of just listening to me burble about stuff. At least that was the impression that I got from the feedback from season one. So there you go, my lovelies. That's the beginning of season two. Take care of yourself. I hope you have the opportunity to wuzz a really, really cute dog in the next week. Bye. You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Sanctuary. If you enjoyed the show and would like to be an absolute bless poppet, you can help to keep the teapot full and the podcast ad-free by becoming a patron at patreon.com/Emma Newman. If you'd just like to buy me a nice cup of tea, go to ko-fi.com/Emma Newman. This episode was brought to you by 6 cups of tea, a slice of Christmas cake kindly made by my mum, and a half-forgotten melody carried on the wind. Go forth, my sweet puddings, and be lovely to each other.